Safety precautions around the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic have affected a number of our broadcasts, and a repeat program has been selected for the following broadcast.
Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry tukuingoa, ko maunga oika te maunga, ko wairo te awa, ko waitamata te whanga. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name's Julie Ferry. I'm one of five Ruskell Community Voice Reps on the Pukitāpapa Local Board of Auckland Council. I'm also part of the City Vision Centre Left whānau, and I have a regular spot here on Red Alert Radio. I'm very keen to get your feedback. You can find me pretty easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook, if you search for Julie Ferry. And it's a bit of a strange last name, which does make it easier to find me. It's spelt F-Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. So if you pop that into Google, you should find me pretty easily. We also now have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. Search for Red Alert Radio AKL and you should find us. We put up links to these shows once they're available as podcasts, and also other bits of useful news that are relevant to the topics we cover. So you might hear me mention a bit during the show, oh, we'll put a link up to that online. That's where we'll put the link up, at the Facebook page, Red Alert Radio AKL. And you can also get our past shows on the Red Alert Radio archive, which is on planetaudio.org.nz. Now today I'm talking with Rachel Lees-Green from the group Women in Urbanism, which has been challenging a lot of the assumptions around public spaces and design, which have been based on men as the main users. Rachel herself is a transport analyst for MR Cagney in her day job and has a lot of expertise in the area of assessing the economic and transport outcomes of transport development projects. Today she's talking with me from the Women in Urbanism perspective, and we'll be examining how the status quo in transport and planning often inadvertently leaves women, and indeed those who aren't able-bodied men of a decent income, out of considerations. Thanks for joining me today, Rachel.
Kia ora, Julie.
Great. Now, first up, tell us a little bit about Women in Urbanism. How did it start and how has it evolved to be where it is today?
So it started in May 2017. Two of my colleagues, Emma McInnes and Abby Granbury, were having had an idea about bringing over an international expert to talk about how gender can be considered in urban planning and design.
Yeah.
And bringing someone over for an Auckland Conversations event.
Yeah.
And so we had a first meeting back then and very quickly realised that there was a lot of interest in this issue and a lot of latent demand from women in the industry to talk about these issues more generally. So we decided that instead of just focusing on having an Auckland Conversations event, we'd actually start a group that was talking about these issues and that could provide a support network for women who wanted to discuss these things and to have like-minded people around.
Cool. So, I mean, my own experience of sometimes in local government saying, hang on a second, what about the gender aspect, or we haven't got any women on this working party, or you know, how are we going to include women's perspectives? And people tend to look at me like I'm a bit mad, which some people probably say I am a bit mad, and that's okay, but the issue is real.
Yeah, and every single one of us who works in the industry has stories about being the only woman in the room in a meeting, or the only woman working on a project.
Yeah.
And of course, how are you going to get good outcomes if you don't have that diversity of ideas in the room?
Yeah, and life experience too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think recent conversations have really focused on safety, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But it's been really telling to me how men have been quite shocked by some of the things that women just routinely do in their everyday lives. And when you think about that in the context of transport and public spaces and how we design the public sphere of life, really, it's quite large.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so you were involved right from the start?
Yeah. So I was very lucky to be working with the people who had the idea, and so I've been able to be involved from the get-go. And we've been really lucky as well that our company, Emma Cagney, is really supportive of all of us being involved.
Yeah, I noticed that they're supporters on the website, which is wonderful.
Yeah,
good to have a supportive work environment.
It is.
And obviously they're a key player in terms of being one of the major consultancies around transport and urban design projects as well.
So yeah, really, especially looking at sustainable transport.
Yeah, which is, so that's great too. Yeah. So what would you say are the goals of women in urbanism?
So at a high level, we've got a mission statement, which is to transform our towns and cities into more beautiful, inspiring and inclusive places for everyone. And we do this by amplifying the voices and actions of all self-identifying women and girls.
Yeah.
And then we have three focus areas that we're working towards. The first one is creating safe spaces for women to talk about issues, whether it's issues relating to working in urban industries or just relating to being women in urban places.
Yeah.
And how that plays out. And so we've got a Facebook group, which is an online safe space for women from across the country to talk about this stuff. And we also run lots of events to get women together in person to discuss these issues.
And I'm in that Facebook group, and I've found it really useful, actually, as someone who doesn't have a sort of academic or professional background in some of the issues, but is really interested in pushing it in the political space.
Yeah.
I found that group really supportive and have appreciated it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful group.
So what was the second area?
The second one is basically calling we want to see more diverse representation of women working in urban industries and also in local government. And we especially want to see more of that diversity at the top.
Yeah.
So more women and more diversity in general in senior decision-making positions. Because, of course, there's lots of evidence that if you have that diversity of ideas and experience, then you do get better outcomes for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then the third thing is looking at applying a gendered perspective to our urban planning and urban design processes.
Yeah.
And there are examples of tools overseas that we could bring into New Zealand and adapt for our own use there.
Cool. Oh, that's going to be interesting to see how Auckland Council in particular do or don't open themselves up for some of those tools, because I know that's... there's been some work done on Auckland as an inclusive city, which was partly a response to... the proposal for Auckland to sign up as an age-friendly city. So it was sort of turned into a bigger piece of work about being an inclusive city, and that's sort of slowly making its way through the organisation. But I do worry sometimes that the political commitment is not necessarily... People go, oh, yep, that's a good idea, but when it comes down to budget and projects and resources... it's going to be interesting to see if the political will follows through.
It can be really challenging to get those changes. Everyone's keen to see things done better, but actually getting the changes to happen, there's so many roadblocks.
How would you hope that Auckland would be different in 10 years as a result of this work? What do you think, as your average woman on the street, so to speak, what would be different about life in Auckland in 10 years?
So I think it's an excellent question, really. Got me thinking a bit. I think a lot of the differences we'd like to see would be having communities that are safer for people to move around in, communities that are more walkable, easier to cycle in, because obviously a lot of women don't cycle at the moment because they're concerned about safety issues.
Yeah.
We'd have more child-friendly urban spaces, and that would give more freedom for children and for their parents.
Yeah.
So we've seen evidence of the decline in children being able to roam freely over the last couple of decades, and we'd really love to see a reverse in that.
Yes, and some really interesting research about the reduction in that, what you've referred to as children roaming, and then that sort of has a correlation with how children get to school as well.
Yes.
Yeah, and being driven everywhere and it's all sort of interrelated, that, your kids are driven to school, therefore they don't roam in their own neighbourhood.
Yeah.
And then that sort of extrapolates out of, they don't go up the dairy to get the milk when you run out, and they don't go down to the park on their own and things like that. Yeah. And then fewer people on the streets means a lower level of passive surveillance and perception of safety as well. So it's sort of this vicious cycle.
Yeah, and a lot of those changes are things that, to an extent, are being we're working towards anyway as an industry. So there are a lot of programs trying to get more kids walking to school again.
Yeah.
And I guess we're just bringing a gendered perspective to that and saying this is an issue anyway and we want to solve it anyway, but it also affects women more than it affects men, and yeah. Let's not lose sight of that.
Yeah, cool. So I sort of cut you off a little bit there. Was there something else in that sort of 10-year, you know, what would Auckland look different? How would Auckland look differently?
I guess the only other thing I was going to mention is obviously women are more likely to live longer than men as well, and so
yeah,
designing cities that work better for the elderly yeah. is, again, a gendered issue.
Yeah. And it's that issue too about independence when you're living on your own.
Yeah.
Whether you're, you know, whatever your age.
So a lot of that comes back to, again, walkability of communities and also having good public transport networks that are really easy to use throughout the day and not just serving peak commuters.
So one of the things when I first got elected to the local board back in 2010, I went and talked to a local budgeting service and sort of said to them, what's the number one thing if you could change something? And I thought they'd say, oh, lift benefit levels, because, you know, benefit levels were too low and unfortunately are still too low. But they said, actually, we find that one of the biggest financial drains on our clients is having to own a car.
Yes.
Because they can't get around without a car in terms of their meeting their obligations, you know, be those work or family or, you know, to MSD or whatever. And so they have to own a car, which then means they have to have a warrant and insurance and registration. Mm. They have to do maintenance on it because, of course, they won't be able to afford a good car. So, you know, they're constantly having to fix it. You know, then there might be an accident. Whereas if they were able to not have a car and rely more on public transport or, you know, be able to access in their own community within a walking distance. Yeah, and that's always stuck with me in terms of it was a surprising answer, but then when you think about it, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's a huge issue in Auckland.
Yeah.
Especially when you get further from the centre that you get, it affects people more and more.
Yeah. So when, and we sort of touched on this a little bit before, but personal safety sort of seems to be one of the top things that comes to mind. And while that's important, what else is sort of sitting there beneath the surface that people might not... I mean, I guess a lot of it does come back to personal safety because that's such a pivotal issue for women being able to access the public sphere. What else is sort of going on in there?
There's a lot of the difference in genders comes down to women being more likely to be in care roles, whether that's caring for children or for other whānau members.
Yeah.
And so that means... And so women are more likely to be primary caregivers and men are more likely to be working full-time.
Yeah.
And this has a huge impact on how we travel and what times of day we travel and where we're going to. And so you see things like men are more likely to travel to and from home directly, they're more likely to travel to the city centre, and they're more likely to travel by car.
Yeah.
And women are more likely to be doing lots of short trips, so trip chaining. So that might be picking up kids on the way home from work, or it might be doing grocery shopping on the way home, for example.
Yeah.
And that means... And because women are more likely to be doing those things, they're also more likely to travel in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And they are also less likely to drive and more likely to be using public transport and walking.
And so that has really interesting implications, thinking about... we've recently done a survey on bus use in the Puketapa Mount Roskill area, and one of the key things that I'm just analysing the results at the moment has come out is a really high proportion of those who answered are going to the city centre. And a lot of them are using the main, what used to be the B-line bus routes, Dominion Road and Mount Eden Road.
Yeah.
And their expectations around travel time are basically, I get on my bus and then it takes me to the city as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And that seems to me a very sort of commuter expectation, whereas particularly the crosstowns are being, in the new network, are being used, it seems to me, much more as those sort of get on, get off, you know, you're not having lots of people getting on at one, sort of in one part of the route, and then everybody gets off at somewhere else at a destination, like you do with a commuter route into the city. So that's interesting, because in theory then the new network should be catering better for women, because yes, the cross-town services and those services in the middle of the day have increased.
Yeah, yeah, and I think there could be further improvements, but definitely the new network and the new fare system that was introduced a couple of years back have made it much easier to do those short trips and transferring and connecting and going to different places that aren't the city.
And I wonder too about the expectation, thinking about that commuter expectation again. I get on near my home, I get off near my work, that's how it works, right? And that experience often doesn't include transferring, whereas if you're doing, what do you call them, trip trains?
Trip chaining,
there we go. You do have that experience of stop-start, whether you're in a car or on a bicycle or on a bus, and so you're possibly more open to the concept of transfers as well.
So, especially if we design our transport network to have things like shops or childcare centres around the main transport hubs, like around train and bus stations.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much easier.
Cool. So thinking about the biggest challenges that women in urbanism faces as a group, what sort of comes to mind there?
I think it's really the slow rate of change that we're going to see. We've got so much ingrained bias in our society and in the systems that we have in our urban industries.
Yeah.
So for example, at the moment New Zealand has only 29% of architects as women and only 14% of engineers.
Gosh.
And it's going to take a long time to change those figures. So the University of Auckland in 2018, their new intake of engineers had, it was 27% women. Right. So it is shifting, but it's a slow process, and it's going to take a long time for those women to work their way up into those senior positions where they actually have decision-making power.
And I guess too, it's a little bit like law school spits out more female lawyers than male lawyers, but we still, a lot of women choose not to practice because then when they get out into the industry is often very unfriendly to the way that they want to live their life.
Yes, yes, and that is an issue in these industries as well, where you have low numbers of women starting, but you also have low numbers of women sticking around, just because it there's more barriers to career progression. And that we see that in urban planning, actually, where, like law, there are slightly more women than men actually going through, and there have been for years and years, but we're not seeing that reflected in at the top, because women just aren't working their way up or are leaving the profession.
Yeah, and some of that will be about the way that the work is structured and the expectation of, you know, full-time, 8 till 5.
Yeah, that's a very difficult expectation to work around if you want to raise a family.
So. Yeah, or, you know, have significant commitments outside your work, whether that's, you know, caring for other family members or volunteer commitments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting, because you'd think that actually what matters more is that you get the work done as opposed to whether you're in the office from 8 to 5, but that's one of my other bugbears.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of talk about flexible work lately, and so hopefully that will start to change and that will help things.
Yeah, I was involved in the union movement before this work, and I have to say people have been talking about those flexible working opportunities and how that's going to be great for women for a long time, and I don't think we've really got it right yet. And one of the other key things is that it needs to be more attractive for men in terms of the status of part-time work and things like that, because then men will be in a better, you know, will be more likely to take up the sharing of the obligations that currently often fall too much on women.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what has surprised you so far about doing this over the last 18 months or so?
I think what's really surprised me, and it's a positive surprise, is just how enthusiastically everyone has embraced women in urbanism as a group and as a concept. And so we've had so many women. We've got over 1,200 women in the Facebook group now from across the country, and I've just been amazed at how fast it's grown. And everyone we talk to in the industry, the women and the men that we work with, are all really positive and supportive.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just been really a really positive, affirming experience to see how much people do want to get behind this and how much people do want to see change.
That's great. That's really encouraging, because I have to say at the decision-maker table with other elected members, sometimes it doesn't feel that way. So it's really good to hear that that is out in the broader urban community in terms yeah. of thinking about these things and taking this as a legitimate issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there will be individuals who don't think that way, but the overarching message does seem to be one of support.
That's great. So do you, and I guess this sort of flows on to my next question about do you feel there's more understanding of that limitation that the traditional approaches have, that people are starting to understand that by doing things the way we've always done them, we have left out the perspectives and the lives, effectively, of children, of women, those who have mobility issues, those on lower incomes? You sort of feel like that's starting to change?
I think to an extent, yes. So when I've talked about this in different forums, a lot of people are really enthusiastic about it and like will come up to me afterwards and say, oh, that's amazing, I didn't know about these differences, I never thought about these things before.
Yeah.
But then I do also wonder if that's partly, in, you know, we get stuck in our own echo chambers and
yeah.
it's hard to tell how much outside of the sphere that I am working within, how much of an awareness there is, yeah, how much that is changing.
So I mean, there are conversations happening with the tertiary providers in terms of the training that people receive. They're still doing, like I'm particularly aware, obviously, of Dori Reeves, who's at the University of Auckland, and she's great and has really championed this issue. Are there others that you're aware of sort of in that training and education space who are championing a different approach, not, you know, sort of questioning whether what we've always done is what we should continue to always do?
So I have an engineering background, so I'm less familiar with... I know Dori Reeves through Women in Urbanism, but
yeah.
I'm not sure if there are others in planning who are doing that.
Sure.
But I know Sube in the engineering department has recently run a forum on
yeah.
women in transport.
Yeah.
And so, again, that's... that was bringing together a whole lot of people to talk about how women experience our transport systems differently and what we can do differently.
So pushing for those perspectives and those conversations to be had.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really encouraging. And I guess I'm thinking too about the conversation about lower speeds and Vision Zero in terms of getting to zero deaths and serious injuries on the road.
Yeah.
And for me, a lot of the people I see pushing there are women. Pippa Coombe, Catherine King, Julian Genta, you know, it is women who are particularly speaking up for effectively pedestrian safety.
Yes.
And for me, a lot of that is also safety for children. And going back to what we talked about before, about the children's ability to roam and move independently too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging too. So how can people find out more about Women in Urbanism? You mentioned a Facebook group and we can put a link up to that. Is there a website as well?
We have a website, womeninurbanism.org.nz.
Sounds easy. We have
a Facebook page, which is public-facing, whereas the group is private.
Yeah.
We're on Twitter at Women in Urbanism, and we're on LinkedIn as well. So, and we have an email address, which is womeninurbanismnz@gmail.com. So there's lots of different ways to get in touch, depending... whatever your preferred flavour is.
Yeah. And I know that you're putting together a speaker list as well. So another one of my bugbears is these, what we call manels, panel discussions that only have men or maybe have a token woman. And so I noticed that's something that Women in Urbanism is working on. Did you want to tell us a bit more about that? Because that might be something particularly for listeners. If you're looking for speakers, here's an opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. So like you said, we're sick of seeing people running all male panels or conferences that are really heavily weighted towards male speakers. And the excuse is always, oh, we couldn't find any women who wanted to speak.
Yeah.
And so we're putting together a list of women on our website, of women who have volunteered and said they're happy to do speaking at events or on panels. And so, yeah, we'd love anyone to nominate themselves or anyone else that they know who they think would be great at doing that, and we can put those names up on the website with a short bio and a photograph. And it means that when people do come to organise events in the industry, there's no more excuses.
Yeah, and I've seen that firsthand. Many years ago I was involved in in a group called Drinking Liberally, which you didn't actually drink lots and lots of alcohol. Like, I don't drink at all. But it had come out of the States where basically there was sort of pub politics type discussions. And we used to try and get women to come, but for some reason Friday night in a pub wasn't that attractive for women to come along and speak, and they often had other obligations and it was quite hard to get them. But often I found in the organising group, who were, you know, some pretty switched on people, that the easy options were always to get men to speak.
Mm.
And, you know, you had to really push even amongst a group of people who, as I say, wanted to do the right thing. If it was a little bit harder, then, yeah, the default was to go, oh, yeah, but this guy will do it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons, folks, you might have noticed I only interview women. Shh, don't tell anyone. That's just a subtle little thing I'm doing to push back against the whole, it's hard to get women to speak publicly. Because, yeah, we've got, you know, thousands of years of being kept out of the public realm.
Yep.
And it's not easy to just overcome that in one generation. Yeah. So thinking about where women and urbanism goes next, any particular projects, or I sort of wonder how you interact with organisations like Bike Auckland, which obviously, you know, has a lot of really great women involved in it. I think about Jessica Rose, obviously, Pippa, who we've already mentioned, but Jaleesa Gracewood. You know, there's the elections coming up next year. I know there's strong links with Generation Zero, which used to have a lot of young men and now has, I understand, a lot of young women involved in leadership roles. So do you see women in urbanism potentially working with those other groups?
Yeah, definitely. So we haven't necessarily done a lot of public-facing work with those other groups, but there is a lot of... We've got friends and people who are members of all those different organisations, and Greater Auckland is another one as well. And so, yeah, we absolutely do talk to them, and when there are relevant campaigns or events, then we can and do work alongside them.
Cool.
Yeah.
And just thinking about Greater Auckland, and there has been some criticism in the past that they haven't had enough women writing, and I know that they have been trying to address that. Is women in urbanism sort of interested in putting their hands up or encouraging some of their members to write? I'm sure some already do.
We've got a couple of people who do put together the odd piece. Obviously, there's a lot of big commitment to regularly write blog articles, but we do have a couple of people already who are doing that, and it's something that we've thought about doing a bit more as well.
Yeah, cool.
So it always comes back to time.
Yeah, it does, and the many commitments that people have, I understand. I'm trying to write an opinion piece at the moment and haven't managed to start yet, but maybe by the time people listen to this it might have already been published, so we'll be okay. The other thing I was curious to explore a little bit with you, we sort of touched on it obliquely a couple of times, is that impact that feeling unsafe has for women on their ability to participate. And, you know, at the time that we're recording this, we've obviously just had a very high-profile case of a woman being killed. And, you know, what do you sort of think about how we can address that as a community, the perception of being unsafe, but also the reality of being unsafe?
Mm.
And sorry, that's a really big question to end on, but give it a go.
Yeah, so it's an interesting issue because obviously it's very topical at the moment, and and it's good to see it being talked about because, as you said earlier, it is the lived reality for a lot of women in this country.
Yeah.
In terms of what we can do to address it, so there are things you can do in urban design to create communities that are safer, and a lot of it comes down to things like lighting and making sure that there are places people want to go to, so shops that are open after dark, which means there are more eyes on the street and
People around.
People around, and so it feels safer and is safer.
Yeah.
But there are also wider societal changes that need to happen in terms of how women experience life and how men treat women and what's considered acceptable behaviour and all of those things, which is a bit harder for us to address.
Well, big issue to end on. Sorry about that, Rachel. It'd be really interesting to talk to you again in a year or so and see how things have progressed. Thanks so much for coming in, and thanks for listening, folks. Love to hear your feedback via Twitter or Facebook. And this has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite ana.
Together next week at 9:00.